Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome along to the VMTB Rugby Pod. Well, the Six Nations has finished Ireland champions again, only the third time ever that they're back-to-back champions. With me as always, Alan Quinlan and Matt Williams. Both of you were there. Alan, another special, special day for Ireland.
Yeah, incredible that they were able to win the championship, given probably the disappointment of the week before against England. You know, they've won the last 9 games out of 10 in the last 2 seasons, you know, last year and this year. So I think to win 9 out of 10 like that, you have to give them massive credit. Was it perfect? Did they get into full flow this championship? Probably not. It's after the World Cup disappointment. I think other teams probably affected differently as well, and probably a little bit of kind of an anti-climax. I said that before going into the tournament. It felt a little bit different this time. It's a wonderful tournament, and for Ireland to manoeuvre their way through, obviously starting in Marseille with a brilliant win, and then Italy, Wales, probably not where, you know, when you look at Italy now, the way they drew with France, beat Scotland, beat Wales. Ireland beat them 36-0 at home, so again, we're kind of losing the plot a little bit here with the expectation. I've said this before, I was involved in plenty of championships where we were struggling to get wins, you know, and we had a lot of barren years, particularly in the 90s, probably, you know, wooden spoons and stuff like that. So now we want 20, 30 point wins every time and perfect performances. So even in Twickenham last week, and, you know, look, probably we're all a little bit guilty, but it was based on the form that we'd seen mainly from England. Not, you know, I think we had all said that Ireland probably weren't in that fourth or fifth gear place where we know they can get to. So, yeah, I think it's to win the championship again like this, back-to-back championships. We've done it twice before, 1948, 49. We won a Grand Slam in 48, won the championship in 49, didn't win a Grand Slam, won a Triple Crown, but did in 2014, 15 again, 2 championships, not Grand Slams. So it's the third time in our history and we're still not happy, in a sense that, you know, people want more. And that goes with the territory. I think Matt probably will understand this as well as a coach. When you win, and always coaches say, and you know, when you win, it becomes harder because there's an expectation. And then if you have a kind of a performance that's not up to scratch for the public or the media, you get kind of heavily critiqued and stuff like that. But that's the pressure you want. Every coach, every player would love to be winning and being scrutinised really heavily. So obviously the World Cup is something that, you know, it'll live with a lot of these players. But for them to come out in this championship and to be standing there last Saturday lifting the trophy, is an incredible achievement, and they deserve massive credit for that, and so do the coaches.
Matt, the man who led them was Peter O'Mahony. We saw him in the anthems there, very emotional. He was saying after the game he hasn't decided. If it is his last time in green, what a way to go out. And for the last, 10, 12 years, he's been unbelievable for Ireland and Munster.
Yeah, and I was delighted for Peter because Twickenham wasn't his greatest performance, but I thought he played really well last Saturday night. And, you know, it's so easy from the cheap seats to criticise people. You know, Peter's one of Ireland's greatest ever players. He's just been around so long. He gives everything he has in every single game, be it in a red shirt or a green shirt. And, look, personally, I think for him, too, to be captain, where he hasn't had a lot of captaincy with Ireland because of the greats that have gone before him, you know, whether it was with Brian O'Driscoll and Paul O'Connell and then Sexton. You know, he did captain the Lions, but they were sort of like single games, if you like, and then the captain for a Six Nations and to win it, like, that's especially as he's coming to the end, whether it is the end or he's coming towards the end. And only he can decide that, and that's rightly so. But that must have been very special for him. And you could see it when the full-time whistle went as well. He was in tears. And, you know, I love that. I love that, that the game can bring you to tears. I love that because that sort of tells people how much you put in. Like you're only in tears because of the effort you've put in to get where you are. And when you're either overjoyed or heartbroken, that's still a great thing about our game. It's an emotional game. Always has been, always will be. And I love it. And look, I just hope Peter makes a decision that he's happy with because he's earned all our respect by his performances over so many years. And I think the other thing is the way his team played. You know, the team supported it, didn't they? That wasn't, as Quinny said, this wasn't our greatest ever Six Nations as far as performance goes. It's Marseille magnificent. But the fact that they gutted it out, the fact that they tried their guts out, you can accuse this Irish team of a lot of things, but not trying, that's not one of them. Even when they were at Twickenham, they led that game in the 81st minute because they put their heart and soul into that game. And I just don't get where a lot of the Irish people are coming from, criticising somehow you can win a trophy, you have your name on a trophy that's been going around for a, you know, the essence of the tournament's been going around 141 years. You win it and somehow that's not good enough.
I could interrupt you, I can understand it in a sense of the constructive criticism, in a sense that we probably know, in a sense that they can be a bit better. On Saturday, they had 18 turnovers again. It's something that we haven't really seen a lot of. I think they've been so efficient in the last couple of seasons. There's certain parts of the game that they critique themselves. Their exit clearances, even on Saturday again, could be better.
But are you now comparing this Ireland team to the New Zealand of 2005, where you used to wake up in the morning and just see them score about 40 to 60
points? There's a little bit of that.
Until Ireland win the World Cup, should we be comparing them to that?
Well, I think, yes, when it's done in a constructive way, Stuart. So, in a sense, I have no problem with people saying, oh, we could have been better. That's not the point of it here. There's a very small minority. I call them guys with yellow streaks down their backs who were talking about Peter O'Mahony. No, you're not. Talking about Peter O'Mahony being emotional before the game. Well, Peter O'Mahony's emotional before the game, not because it's just on the day. We know there's something happening here. That's the reality. He's either, you know, hanging up the boots, or it may be the last time. It may not be definite, but he's emotional because I played my 200th cap for Munster. Was it 2009 or 10? I don't know what year it was. But I remember going out onto the field and I actually got really emotional, and I never really cried in anthems or anything like that. But I got really emotional and my eyes watered up a little bit. And here, I think that was against the Ospreys on a Saturday night in Thomond Park. It was a league game. It wasn't like a do-or-die league game in a sense that around qualification. There was a big crowd in Thomond Park on that night. But I got emotional and I was trying to hide it. The emotion can hit you because of internal reasons. I felt, God, this is coming to the end. You know, this is my last season. I'm never going to experience this feeling. Not just on this particular night that, you know, the crowd were going crazy for Alan Quinlan. That wasn't the case. But if there was no crowd there, running out my teammates there, I went, God, I can't believe this is nearly over. I've done this for 15 years and I'll miss this so much. Where have the years gone? So the people with the yellow streaks down their back, as I call them, the cowards, who were cowards when they played sport themselves, and there's a couple of them I know online that I know for a fact they were cowards. They were yellow bellies that are just very good with their fingers typing stuff. I think it's very insulting and it's sad to see people kind of, look, I'm not going to make it speak any more about it, but that's the reason I'm trying to explain and articulate that, you know, you could run out in a GA ground in West Cork and with 50 people there and it could be your last season. And you're entitled to get emotional for your own internal reasons. Your mum or dad might be sick. You might be doing it for one of your kids, whatever the case may be. So for people to start kind of putting stuff up online, oh, Peter's getting emotional, this is a joke, it's only Scotland, it's, you know, what's the big deal?
People didn't really say that, did they? Did people really say that?
Just a very small few. I just see some of that, some of those comments, you know. But look, it's the same as the people, Matt, who tried to knock the Irish team. And I do think there is an argument sometimes that Irish rugby does, we add to it, and there's a core group, there's a small group who add to this expectation and this kind of elitism around rugby. I always say it with hand on heart, I came from a farm in Tipperary, GAA background essentially, so I didn't experience the school system or anything like that. I never had any problem with anyone from school, private schools. I came through the club system. So, you know, okay, I'm on the side that who were usually critique, in a sense that I'm not with them, but I've come from that side that all this elitism is there. It is what it is. I never went to an Ireland in the 20s or 19s and went, God, the fellow over there is I don't like him because he went to a private school. So sometimes we do kind of add to the, we give ammunition a little bit, and maybe we all did that the week of the England game. But this team has done a remarkable job, I think. Sometimes I think that the crowd in the Aviva Stadium, it's more of an event rather than an occasion, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So they're at an event. It's like there's a lot of corporates there. There's a lot of people there who've got tickets through companies or businesses. And that sometimes you can't really change that, in a sense. You can't go to the RFU and say, well, you can't sell any corporate seats, you can't do any pre-match lunches, because that's not the reality. It's a business. But you know, sometimes the that side of the game kind of it affects the atmosphere and it affects the crowd. And but in a sense, look, I think they've done a remarkable job, and I think Farrell has led them brilliantly.
Let me interrupt you back there. I don't think anyone that criticises someone, you put on a green jersey, you put on a jersey of your nation, doesn't matter where you are in the world, and someone says, oh, I don't like him because he went to a school, or I don't like him because he didn't go to a school, I don't like him because he's uneducated, or I don't like him because he's a doctor. I mean, that is just bigotry. Like, let's just wipe anyone with those opinions. And there's a lot of them in Ireland, and they're the begrudges. When we went to Twickenham, when Ireland went to Twickenham, they were favourites for a reason. Not because people were up themselves. They went to Twickenham favourites because of what they'd done over the last 3 years. To not say Ireland were favourites was pure ignorance. So if people were saying Ireland were favourites going to Twickenham and saying, oh, you're saying that because you're up yourself, you know, look, let's not let morons into our discussion.
It is a bit of a minority, Matt. And it is, Quinny.
Let's ignore him, mate. Let's not give him a voice.
Okay. Yeah,
You really well. Peter Omani cried because when you retire from elite sport or any sport, as you said, it can be at West Cork playing in GAA, that's part of your life that you cherish that's over, and it's never coming back. And you have to mourn that. And here's the other part. If players, especially at the elite end, don't mourn it properly, don't get it out of their system, and don't get on to the next part of their life, we know that's when some players have problems moving on.
Yeah.
So I just think all of that's ignorance.
Mate. I think,
I'm not criticising you in any way. I'm not criticising you in any way, mate.
No, I know that. Yeah, and I think there's a fair few casual rugby fans, and that's great because there's casual fans in all sport, but then there's ones who are very strongly opinionated and quite insulting at times. And
yeah,
you know, and don't want the Irish team to win. I have GAA mates and soccer mates who I know deep down they would be delighted. They're happy when the national team is. Just to finish on that, for any of the begrudgers out there, 1.2 million people tuned into us on Virgin Media for the Ireland-France game on Friday night in the opening day of the championship, and 300,000 streams. That's 1.5 million people in the peak of that match tuned in. That's excluding hotels, restaurants, pubs, hospitals.
Yeah.
So half of the country most probably tuned in on that Friday night. And it just shows I'm a massive soccer fan and I love the Republic of Ireland and I will support them. Some of my best memories are, one of my best memories is Ray Houghton scoring in 88, at Euro 88. So I'm not a sports fan who kind of doesn't go, oh, wants other sport. I love all Irish sports people. And look, that's my rant over, I think, in a sense. But it's kind of all linked back to what you were asking, Stuart. The expectation of us, and I said it recently, I said we shouldn't be winning World Cups. Well, that's probably the wrong way of putting it. We would do very well to win World Cups, and what we've done and achieved and been got to this level of consistency in the last couple of years shows we've a great system here and this is a really good generational team. But unfortunately, they came up short compared to the other nations. South Africa, New Zealand, England, then playing numbers, France, you know, we four teams here, France have 14 and a second division. So it all goes back to what I was saying. This team has done a remarkable job. It's the third time in our history that we've won back-to-back championships. Yes, critique it in a way that we know we can be better. I think they will. But I think it's a wonderful achievement and it shouldn't be sniffed at. Right?
Matt, as a former coach, Andy Farrell sits back over the next couple of months or even the next month and reviews it. What are the big ticks for Ireland? Is it Jack Crowley? Is it Calvin Nash? In your eyes, or bigger picture pattern, has attack improved, Matt? Or which way do you think he'll see it?
It's a great question, Stu. I think the first thing is you'll see is his trophy sitting on the bench. You know, like,
sorry, I mean individually outside of the accolades of winning, which is incredible.
That's the first thing you'll see, right? So there's a trophy sitting on the bench. So what they're doing is working. Even when it's not going great, they're working. The second part is it's transition year losing Sexton, losing an all-time great player at 10 that's been there for 15 years. Yeah, and we saw what losing their great player in DuPont did to France and Farrell to England. We saw that. What it's done, it completely, their attack became completely disorganised, except for brief periods of the game. Jack Crowley stepped in and did a sensational job. So the attacking system carried on, the defensive system carried on, an extremely good defensive effort right through the tournament, the lowest number of tries conceded from anyone. They would say that they went away to Marseille and won, and they went to Twickenham and performed to an incredible level, not as well as they could. So I think he'll say a lot of things. I think then he'll say, what is it we have to do to go to South Africa to win? That's the next part. So he'll say, look, we've got through the World Cup, remembering that the Six Nations post-World Cups is usually a poor Six Nations because the Southern Hemisphere, Australia, New Zealand and South Africa, after the Six Nations, they don't play for another 7 months till June of the following year. In the north, you have to play 6 weeks later, and emotionally that's hard. You're in camp. You know, the Six Nations countries in the World Cup year are in camp for almost 6 months of the year. That drains on you. So I think he would say the enthusiasm, the team spirit, the culture, leadership, all those things were ticks. It doesn't mean they performed at their best. So what have they got to do to win in South Africa? He would also say, being what he is, which is an old warrior himself, it's the next battle that counts. So he knows to go to the High Veld and win, they're going to have to be considerably better than they were to win the Six Nations Championship. There's no doubt about that. I think number one on the list is Jack Crowley's kicking off the tee. He's going to have to work with, or Jack's going to have to get help and work to get his consistency up. He's going to have to work at that with Munster. We want to see Jack kicking at around 85% and above. And then I think that the other part is learning from what he did with his selections. The 6-2 bench, it worked one time and it was a disaster another. What do they do when they lose Hugo Keenan? That seems to be one of the only positions in the team where Ireland don't have multiple choices. You know, when you've got Gary Ringrose not making the side, your centres are good. You know, you look at the wingers that were going to come back, with Mac Hansen comes back and so on. What are the options? They've got some good options there. Second row is McCarthy coming through. You know, you've got Ollie Jaeger stepping up, plenty of options at hooker, two of the best hookers in the world now, the Irish side. So he would have some of those questions, but the questions would be asked only in the context of beating South Africa.
Alan, to wrap up Ireland, because we must move on, Matt's talked about the positive bits, maybe the work-ons. How does that performance against England not happen again in South Africa, for example?
Just probably being a bit more shrewder with their exit strategies, I think.
And sorry, he said a couple of weeks ago the best thing that could maybe happen for this Ireland team.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Was that defeat to England?
Yeah, I think.
How does he work that out without saying the obvious? You learn from your.
It's far less disappointing than the loss to New Zealand. That's the reality. So
right, yeah.
You're always going to, you know, Six Nations is difficult at times. So I'm far more disappointed about what happened against New Zealand than what happened against England. You can learn a lot from it. I think the exit strategy is one thing that I would say, reliancy on James Lowe.
They're too reliant, do you think?
A little bit. James Lowe is a wonderful boot and he's been so effective for Ireland. But I think we need to have a second option there and vary it a little bit. We highlighted the fact that the first kick, they score off it. It doesn't go out to touch. It's a miss. It's a skewed kick in a sense that they counter-attack England. The second one, Gibson Park, goes kind of long up the touchline. It's not a box kick. It goes long. They play in field. They score again. So they score two tries. So straight away, there is a learning from that. And if you're not going to get every kick perfect, but I think our reaction was a little bit slow. Ireland were quite narrow in their defence. They got their alignment wrong for the first one, a little bit tight. The second one, again, a lot of them folded around the far side. Tyke Furlong is your outside defender, so well highlighted. So I think just be a little bit better with their exits. Probably understanding that teams now see Ireland's cohesion and they can't really get the ball off them mid-flow. But they can keep loads of numbers in front of them.
That maybe happened so, against
correct.
Scotland
it
there.
It did happen, loads. So they're not putting anyone in the breakdown, Stuart. There's nobody in the breakdown. Somebody makes a tackle.
But it's very difficult.
He's tackled, reload.
Even okay. Ireland to always break the gain line.
Absolutely. So a little bit of variety there in a sense of using the kick pass scenario. Little chips in behind. Or else kicking long, playing for territory. So we probably played a lot out around the middle half of the field in a couple of these matches. And they're a brave side and they're accurate and they get to the edges. But I think teams are standing off a little bit and they're not biting down with the front line runners. A lot of the balls are going out the back. So just getting better at identifying there where you need to hit a front line runner and just varying things up a little bit, being a bit pragmatic at times where you need to just get forwards carrying. It's just probably re-looking at all that situation again. And when you look at it and the coach has produced those videos, so you understand that this was a time we should have passed. This was a time we should have carried. This was a time we should have kicked. It's easy kind of say that now in a broad sense. But I just think if I was being specific, I'd say just the exit strategies again. Because teams analyse Ireland's strengths and these were strengths of Ireland. Ireland's exits were superb in the last couple of seasons. So now they're saying, how do we counteract that? Will we drop more players back? Do Ireland narrow up a little bit because, or do we kick straight back at them? Most of the time we kick straight back. So this is a new thing, teams running back. And then just probably the lateral type continuity of keeping passes and trying to get to the edges a lot. Teams are just fanning out a lot. So it's just a bit of identification there and fixing that up a little bit. But the brass tacks and the fundamentals of, there's a lot of good rugby players there who have won a lot, have won big matches, have experienced a lot in the last number of years and are, you know, if there's a Lions team being picked this summer, there's a huge number of Irish guys on the tour. So they're top quality players. I think there needs to be a little bit of a small evolution of some players coming in, the more fresh, kind of enthusiastic young guys that you can have in around the squad. I'm not necessarily go straight in the team because we're very early in this kind of transition or this cycle, if you like. If we can get a few more players in the mix, we've seen Joe McCarthy, he's been a massive positive. I'd love to see Thomas Ahern, you know, being in around the squad. He was named in the squad to train. Jamie Osborne, really good player. Sam Prendergast. You know, there's a few young players coming in that can make a difference. Calvin Nash has been a big positive. you know, Joe McCarthy, Jack Crowley. So there's three or four that have come into in around the group. So yeah, not huge changes needed, but I just think being sharper and being better at some parts of their game. And I think they'll still go to South Africa and have a real good shout there. It's going to be incredibly difficult, obviously.
Stu, could I just throw in there on Alan's point? I think something that everyone's, Miss Alan sort of touched on it there, is Scottish tactics. Everyone's tried rushing defence against Ireland, and the Scots, and that makes holes. If you have rushing defence, sometimes that leaves holes. And so Ireland against both the Russian defence of the South Africans, when they played them two times, it found holes in them. The Scots didn't rush at all. Alan sort of put on it. They just came forward slowly, linked, stayed connected, put two guys in each tackle, and then got out. And the two guys in the tackle stopped the offloads. They took a risk. They went high. They took the risk of having head contact, but they didn't get any head contact. As Alan said, 18 turnovers, and Ireland just couldn't get a line break. Scotland did over 200 tackles compared to Ireland in the 80s. So I think that they're sending a bit of a message out to the world. Look at the different defence and how that can nullify what Ireland's attack can do. Now, Ireland were very patient, won the game, got over the line three or four more times, got held up. I know that. But still, I don't think we gave, on the night, because of the emotion and the trophy, I don't think we gave the Scottish defensive tactics enough comment. And I thought they were, in hindsight, looking back on it, I thought they were very smart.
Yeah, they certainly were.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We'll move on and we'll go by the table. So next up, France. Matt, we'll look to you again there. They got that win against England. What a way to finish their championship. A couple of weeks ago, they were in crisis. Now they finished second. Are they still in inverted commas a crisis, Matt? I think that's pretty harsh, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they're by no means near their best this tournament. We saw that in Marseille. No one picked 5-1 to Ireland. They should have lost to Scotland, and they should have lost to Italy. So they probably escaped a disaster.
Does he keep his job, Matt?
I think he'll keep his job, especially with, you know, it's the old story, mate. They should have, but they didn't. You know, they did win, and they just got the draw, and then they played well on Saturday. It was a good game. France-England was one of the better games of the tournament, and they got away with it. Thomas Ramos kicked a great penalty late in the game to win the game. Interestingly, from a similar position where Jack's been missing some of his, a long way out but straight in front. They're the ones we need Jack Crowley to put over. But I think wiser heads will prevail. To throw away a great coach like Gaultier. Remember, this side's played exceptionally well under Gaultier for four seasons. Won championships before they lost to South Africa, 19 games in a row at home. You know, just really and really playing quality rugby. Plus, he was minus his two best players. I think wiser heads will prevail, and Fabian will remain. I certainly hope he does.
Are we too harsh on him, Matt?
Yeah, I think so, Stu, for sure. I think this comes back to Alan's point. We can make comment that the team's not playing well, whether it's France or Ireland, and that's factual. But to say it's not good enough in Ireland's case was ridiculous, and to say we need to sack the coach and start again after they'd been done so well. And knowing that he lost the best player in the world and one of the best tens in the world, I think is an overreaction. And while the media here carries on with that, and that can be France, either love you or hate you. You win, you're a hero, you lose, you're a mug. I think wiser heads will prevail and the national side will continue on. I think if they do continue on, they will have some more success. Ireland will have them at home next year, which will be a plus, but I don't think France in the near future are going to be easy.
Yeah, they certainly have plenty of depth there, like George Henry Calom and the Tuff and Ozil. If we move on to England, finished third in the championship, they'll be gutted by that defeat. But that performance against Ireland, which we've talked about, well, we weren't surprised. Maybe taken it back, is that the right words? But do you see them still evolving this game plan?
Yeah.
In the next 12 months?
They'll certainly be a lot more enthusiastic and there's a lot more promise around this team, I think. After those performances in the last 2 weeks, obviously losing to France so narrowly with the penalty at the end of the game.
What did you make of Steve Borthwick saying they didn't lose, they just ran out of time?
Yeah.
Do you like that one, Quinny? Did you?
It's a good one, actually, isn't it? I didn't hear him say that. They ran out of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Ran out of time, exactly. Yeah, I think they were very brave in their approach and they got some great tries. Marcus Smith's try was superb. Ben Earl again was very good. He was the one who gave away the penalty at the end of the game. There was some debate about that. I think it was a penalty. Yeah, I just think there's not enough of a rap for me. And I highlighted Jack Conan's one the week before. And a lot of people just, that goes over their head. Jack Conan could have broke his neck from the tackle from Ben Earl the week before. So if you're in tackling in that kind of technique, it's the chop tackle type scenario. Some of them you're going to get right and you're going to get more of a rap. I think... You know, people were saying there could have been other ones in the game as well, but the one that got picked, sometimes a referee will let a few 50-50s of those and they see a bit of an arm. But I just think it was a pity because I thought England deserved to win that game in the end. The way they fought back and the way they played, they were brave. And we've seen a different sort of enthusiasm from them in the last few weeks. I go back to Scotland and Murrayfield, you know, they're chasing a game at 9 points down, 10 minutes to go, and they're box kicking, you know. So it's a mentality shift. It's going to take some time. We saw Ireland a couple of years ago change their approach around attack and start getting some good tries, and it was a catalyst for a lot of foundations and improvements in attack. So I think England will. So I think they've, to win 3 games out of 5 is still not a great return for an English side. The last couple of years, it's better than the last few years because it's only been 2 out of 5 on a couple of occasions. So, but they were much better, and I think I'd be more enthusiastic if I was an English rugby fan. And I think we've said it, a lot of us, that they're capable of playing so much better rugby than what we've seen.
Italy next up in fourth, Matt. First time winning 2 games. In 11 years, 2013, I think they've won your hearts again, the Azzurri, haven't they, Matt?
Oh, they've played brilliantly, haven't they? And apart from the Irish game at the Twickenham, where they were, the Aviva, where they were poor, they've been good the whole tournament. First half against England, the very first game of the tournament, they played really well. And they probably lost that game by self-inflicted injuries. They dropped the ball in the second half. They were unforced errors. Gave away some really silly penalties and just invited England back into the game. So, and interestingly, they're the only team in the tournament with a new head coach from the World Cup. And you can see there's been a mending of the spirit, if you like. Like, while we say the French spirit has been wounded by the loss of the World Cup, Casadas mended them mentally. I thought they might have dropped the game after that Irish game, but of the last 3 games of the tournament, from drawing with Italy, beating Scotland at home in front of 75,000 at the Olympic Stadium, and then going to Wales, I tipped Italy, but I didn't do it with any conviction. I did it because I wanted them to win rather than I thought they could win. I thought, they can't do this 3 weeks in a row, and they did. They did do it 3 weeks in a row, and except for the upright and some controversy on that penalty after full time against France, they could have come away with 3 wins, 2 of them on the road. So I think while it's too early to open champagne corks, everyone said we need Italy competitive, we need Italy competitive. We said it for a decade, and all of a sudden they're competitive. Everyone starts looking over their shoulders and goes, geez, I don't want to lose to Italy. You know, it's, you can't have it both ways. But they are competitive, and this is the result. You know, this is the result of the same reason why Irish rugby is strong is why Italian rugby is strong. 2019, when Conor O'Shea started putting all those things in place with Stephen Aboud in the academies, that takes 5 or 6 years before you start reaping the rewards. And you saw, we've seen the Italian 20s over the last few years play well. They had an up and down tournament. They had some great wins, the Italians. Then they lost to Wales on the weekend, which I was really shocked with. This is the under 20s level. But they've had good under 20s for 3 or 4 years, competitive. And that will mean their national team will be competitive. And they are. And I think that is exactly what everyone wants. No one wants to go to Rome and say, this is over, it's going to be boring, we're going to get smacked. Everyone wants to go to Rome when it's competitive. And I really hope they keep going. I really do. I think Casada, I was doubtful of Casada, I've got to say. So I didn't think he's done a particularly good job here in France. He's worked in a number of top 14 franchises and hasn't really set the world on fire. People I know and respect really rate him. And I think he's done a superb job in getting the collective mentality, but also their attack. They've attacked off scrums really quite brilliantly, to be really honest, quite brilliantly. And the attack in general has improved. So, I think they've come out of this tournament way in front of almost any other team. The improvements we've seen, they're probably better as far as if we compare it to the World Cup to now, they'd be the winners, the real winners of this World Cup.
Yeah, it's been some turning around for them over the last 6 months. I don't think it did Scotland a disservice there and missed them out. They should be just ahead of Italy. But 2 wins, not the championship they would have wanted. You know,
I think
this was one of the great Scotland teams, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think what happened to them in Italy was unexpected. And, you know, credit to Italy, the way they played and the way Scotland couldn't shake them off. They were brilliant in the first 10, 15 minutes and we thought it was going to be a big win for Scotland, a really ruthless performance. That never happened. Very small margins for Scotland. You know, they should have, I think they'd be very frustrated with the France performance, particularly when they were ahead in that second half, that they didn't kick on. They had opportunities and they got into a lot of kick tennis and didn't keep playing. And then in the end, the try that was given and the debates around that obviously are well documented. So
see if you're Gregor Townsend and you say they were pretty happy with their performance against Ireland, would that be fair enough?
Definitely.
So if they play at 90 or 95% in Dublin, Ireland play at 75 or 80 and they still come up short, is that just like, what do we do here, or we can still close this gap?
It's a really good question. I don't know. I think Ireland, both sides cancelled each other out. It was really attritional that first half. And you've got to be patient in rugby and tight games. And, you know, again, it's down to expectation. But if you don't respect the opponent in a sense that if you think it's going to be easy and just going to happen, you've a problem. I think Ireland had to really dig in, roll up the sleeves against Scotland at the weekend. And that didn't surprise me in the slightest. Scotland players, heads on the line, coach head on the line after Italy. So what I'm in a different scenario, and again, it's not the reality. Scotland should have beaten France, and should have beaten Italy as well. I think they were architects of their own downfall, and it's their biggest problem. They just switch off. They become passive. They become a little bit sloppy. And they don't bring that intensity that's required over the 80 minutes and that ruthlessness.
So what needs to change?
I don't know. Maybe it's a mental thing. I think they need more power up front. I think, you can't just invent players. We've spoken about the power situation in Ireland at times. If you don't have power, you can make up for that in a sense with footballing ability. Ireland have a lot of ball carrying forwards. We're very comfortable, very skillful. You don't see Scott Cummins making a lot of passes. You don't see Gilchrist making a lot of passes. I think they're hard and they work their socks off. So if they don't have that out-and-out power, I think footballing ability and all that kind of stuff. Really good back row, Dempsey, Darge, Fagerson's an option, a really good player. Jamie Ritchie's slipped off the radar a little bit, unfortunately. So I think it's down to that power up front and maybe the mentality. But, you know, they keep jumping on Matt Williams when he critiques him over the years. But the facts are there. You know, you can Google Scottish rugby results and there's been lots and lots and lots of disappointments. And that's the 10th time in a row that Ireland have beaten the Scottish side. So, yeah, they still have a lot of ability. And that's the frustrating part here. I think there's a very core group of very good players there.
Last but not least, Wales' first ever wooden spoon in the Six Nations. Matt Gatland offered his resignation to the Welsh Rugby Union Chief Executive, Abby Tierney, at the weekend. She said, not a chance, you're sticking with us. Where do they go from here, Matt?
Well, I think if you compare Scotland and Wales, the Welsh boys are trying their guts out for 80 minutes. They just don't have the talent. They got a talent deficit, where Scotland have got the talent but can't put it together for 80 minutes week after week after week consistently. I feel for Gatty, and you know what? I really admire him. At his stage of his life and his coaching career, he's got to know that he doesn't really need this challenge. I think he's doing it because he owes Welsh rugby. I really do believe that. Now, people say, oh, he's getting paid, he's doing that. Yep, I get it. Let me tell you, when you're in that hot seat, it's going to take an absolute bucket load of money to cop the crap you're copping when you're in there and you're losing and you don't win games, right? It's really tough. And I really admire Gatty where he's there. I have no doubt that he's being sincere when he offered his resignation. And I have no doubt that getting rid of him would be the wrong thing to do. Because the only way out for Welsh rugby is to stick with it and move through this time while they develop players and bring them through. There is no shortcuts at the elite end of the game. There is no shortcuts. Irish rugby is strong, not by accident. Australian rugby is weak, not by accident. Australian rugby was strong, is now weak. Irish rugby was weak in the 90s, is now strong. None of that's by accident. What's happening to Wales is because of their systems below. And I think having someone like Gatty there who's got wisdom, who's got experience, who the players obviously believe in, I think is a bonus. But I think it's a really hard road for them. Look, let's come back. Let's show you what I mean. Against France at Cardiff, that young Welsh side tackled their hearts out. Like, that was inspirational to me. And I don't know how many times Penno made a break down his wing. And just from nowhere, these scarlet jerseys were climbing over each other to get to him. And you could see the frustration in Panama. He did it about five times. But they were just trying their heart out. But in the end, it wasn't enough. France had too much talent. And it was 45-20-ish. I can't remember the exact score. But they put all those points on in the last 10 minutes. It didn't reflect the game. But I think Welsh rugby's is on a really, really tough road. And I think they're going to be on that for quite some time, because below them in their professional teams, they're on a tough road as well.
Well, let's see if they can sort something out there. Matt, Alan, thanks for your time over the last couple of months.
Pleasure, Stuart.
And the patience. Well, thanks for listening, and all the listeners and viewers. What a championship it's been. Ireland coming out trumps once again.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.